Well, good morning and happy Mother's Day. It's a day filled with lots of different emotions as we have mothers that we've lost. Oh, thanks, Corinne. These tables aren't light. I got to see my mom and dad live in Chilliwack, and I got to see my mom this past week, and my dad, it was his birthday on Friday. He's 83, and mom just turned 80, so it was good to see them. But I just want to go over just a review of the last couple of weeks. And in week one, we talked about the life we have is often a reflection of the thoughts that we think. And we were challenged to renew our minds with truth. And then last week, Pastor Ryan talked about how what we think about ourselves actually matters. And he challenged us to choose to address the lies we believe about ourselves with the truth of God's word. And today we're going to explore a simple tool called reframing. And before I came here, Lisa said, "Do you have something planned for Mother's Day?" Craig's a little slow sometimes when it comes to that. And as I was driving in, I'm like, yes, my message, it's for Mother's Day. So I'm reframing, right? So let's look back at to week one in the verse we started with in 1 Corinthians 10. Am I doing something? Funny noises? There's something happening. We're going to reframe it. Ah, it's gone. See? Thanks, Shane. It says, "For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ." And if you've been with us over the last couple of weeks, whether it's online or in person, we've been talking about the power of the mind. And as God created the mind, it is incredibly powerful. It's incredibly complex. And we have these things called neural pathways. And what's so interesting is that every time we think a thought, we're actually creating patterns or pathways in our brain. And the more often we think a thought, the easier it is to keep thinking that thought over and over again. And so we want to expand on that today with something called, we're just starting with something called cognitive bias or mental filter. And a cognitive bias, a simple definition, a cognitive bias is a mistaken reasoning based on personal experiences or preferences. It's a mistaken reasoning based on what I've experienced in life and what I would like life to be like. So we can call it a mental filter or a mental framework. So if we grew up in a context where we had something really bad happen to us, a lot of times we could have a framework of thinking that when that sort of event or situation happens again, we think negatively. And for example, you know, maybe unfortunately there's a lot of us that have had either emotional abuse or physical abuse in some of our relationships. And, you know, a lot of times the physical abuse is by men. And we see men and we have that experience of abuse. And so the cognitive bias that starts to form is men are hurtful. Men are abusive. And because of what happened to us, oftentimes we can inaccurately judge someone else and say, even if that person isn't, that's what they are. And it might be false. You know, we might have grown up with parents who, you know, said bad things about wealthy people because, you know, they didn't have a lot of wealth growing up. So all wealthy people are bad, they're evil. And then we find we're starting to succeed financially later in life. And some people actually start to feel guilty because they, you know, they have more than what their parents did. And it's not a bad thing that, you know, they're more financially secure, but those events from the past frame how we view the present. So the filters we have, they shape how we see life. And what's interesting, if we change the filter, it often changes how we feel. So change the filter, change the feeling. How many of you have used Zoom over the last 2 years? Come on. It's been a lot, right? Keep your hands up. We're going to keep our hands up. How many of you have used some type of beautification filter? Is that you, Derek? I used it. Come on, I looked 40 again, okay? It was great. Some of you are lying, and you need to repent. And so we're going to explore something called reframing, and that's simply creating a different way of looking at a situation or a relationship by changing its meaning. And this, a great example of this is in Numbers 13 and 14, when the nation of Israel was rescued by God out of their slavery in Egypt, and they were brought to the edge of the land that God had promised to their ancestor Abraham, and God was saying, go in and take it. And so Moses, the leader of the tribe at that time, sent 12 spies into the land to just check it out, see what's there, you know, what's going to happen when we enter. And so they went into the land, and this is what it says in Numbers 13. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here's its fruit. And then you start to see the negative framing. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. And then one of the spies, Caleb, there were two spies that wanted to go in and take over the land, Caleb and Joshua. Caleb said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. But then the other spies, 10 of them, they said, we can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are. And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land that they had explored. They said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. The descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. And then Joshua and Caleb both said, the land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them. So what happens? The nation of Israel decides, we're not going to take the land. We're not going to go in there. They disobey God, and they don't trust in the promise that he gave them, that he would deliver the land to them. So God says, okay, I'm taking my hands off this generation. You guys are going to wander in the desert for 40 years until you've all passed on, and then I'm going to use the next generation to take the land. So two people reframed what they saw in light of God's promise. And the rest, they couldn't see past the difficulties in front of them, and they stopped trusting God. And what happened is the filter changed. Their perception of how they felt. They felt like grasshoppers. But it wasn't the facts that were different. It was the filter. How we frame something determines how we see it. And reframing is creating a different way of looking at a situation or a relationship by changing its meaning. So this past week, I took David and Becca and my wife Lisa, and we went to our family of churches called the Mennonite Brethren. We have an annual general meeting, super exciting stuff, right? As soon as you say annual general meeting, you're like, wow. But it was good. There's a lot of positive stuff going on. As soon as you just stick meeting, though. Anyways, we made it down there, went to the Saturday sessions, some awesome stuff happening in our conference. And the next day, we had a bit of a break, so we decided to go on a hike to a falls. And on the way to the hike, my truck just stopped. And the gas gauge read E. So what you need to know about my truck is that when it's full, it reads E. And I get the warning light, and then it gets to 3/4 of a tank, and it's fine, and then it gets down to 1/4, and again, it wants to go to empty. So, you know, we didn't know whether it was full or not. David said, maybe someone siphoned the gas, right? So we called BCAA, and, And while we were waiting for them, the truck fired back up. I managed to limp it to a gas station, filled it up. It was not the gas. And then it sort of worked. A tow truck driver came and had a look at it, hit on my wife, wasn't a fan of that. And so we went to the hike. We got to the hike. It was wonderful. The falls were great. And, oh, we had a toddler with us too, okay, Luca. And then we were driving back to where the conference was, and the truck died, and it wasn't going to go again. So we called BCAA again to come and tow the truck. We phoned to the retreat center where we were, and one of the other pastors came out to pick us up. And while I'm sitting there, RCMP drives up, comes up beside the window. She's like, "So, just having a snack or something?" I'm like, "Nope, we're broke down." And she goes, "Okay." And she goes, "Are you Craig Reimer?" I'm like, "Yeah." She did her homework before she got out of her cruiser. She goes, "You don't have a driver's license." I'm like, "Sure I do." She's like, "Nope." And so it was in the back of the truck in a backpack. So I went back, I got it, I handed it to her. She's like, "Oh." She goes back to her cruiser, comes back. "You have a health condition." I'm like, "Yes, I do. It's sleep apnea. My doctor gave me a note so that I could still drive." She's like, "Well, you don't have a driver's license. You can't drive." And I'm like, "Well, my truck's not going anywhere." So I was so confused, and she was so confused that she didn't even give me a warning. She just said, "Your wife's going to have to drive." I'm like, "Okay." So in my head, and it was the fuel pump, by the way, which is inside the gas tank, and I could have gone, "This sucks. I just did my starter the week before. I had put it in. I bashed up my hands doing it. Now I have to figure out what to do and waste time on this truck. I could fix it myself, but I'm on the road, so it's going to be like a $700 job. And this is just, you know, this is the worst experience ever." But how I thought about it in my own head was, we broke down on a safe part of the highway. It was a double lane. The toddler with us was awesome. He just entertained himself the whole time. We had root beer soda water. My brother-in-law, he has connections. So someone picked us up, brought us back to the conference. The tow truck got towed to a garage, to Barney's garage. And they were super relaxed about it, but they couldn't fit it in. So my brother-in-law, Steve, came out after the conference was over with his flat deck, booked us in with a guy he knows. We had to drive down this lane, and there was just garbage the whole way, and then we got to this mechanic's shop. And then Steve let us use the truck for the week. We got to play with kittens. Every step of the way, I didn't get a ticket for not having a driver's license. Every step of the way, God's presence was with us in that. And I didn't despair. I didn't get anxious. It was how it was framed in my head. And then that does not happen very often. I generally try to be positive, but you know, things happen. Life happens. And we can't control what happens to us, but we can control how we frame it. And what I want to do is just slow down and think about your life right now. I mean, I can't control what happens to me, but I can control how I frame it. Think about even the expectations that we often have, you know, and we wonder, you know, I wonder if I wanted something in life, but right now I'm experiencing the opposite. I thought by this time I would be doing such and such. I'd be in this place, or I'd have this, or I would have accomplished this, or I'd have this relationship. And we really wanted something, but instead of achieving or accomplishing or having it, we're the exact opposite. You know, maybe you went to college and studied and got the degree, and it felt like you were prepared to do something meaningful with it. And now instead you're in a job that's unrelated. And it seems like it's beneath your education. And we wonder, how did I get here? Maybe for you it was that you got to a point in your life where you thought, you know, I'd be married, I'd be financially out of debt, or I'd be able to travel, or I'd have, you know, some type of ministry, I'd be making a difference. You know, my kids would have been better off. And we find ourselves waking up and thinking, I'm not where I wanted to be. And we're confused by it. And if you ever wake up and think, this isn't what I wanted, I wanted the exact opposite. The Apostle Paul knows exactly what you feel like. And in his story, it's incredibly emotional because he had a heart for God. And he only wanted to serve God, and he wanted to please God and preach the gospel. And he felt called to Rome to do that. And he knew that if he could reach the people in Rome, which is the central hub of the empire, the gospel would spread all over the world. So his dream was to go to Rome and preach. And instead of being in Rome preaching, he found himself in Rome as a prisoner, locked up, on house arrest, waiting, and possibly going to be executed. Everything he wanted, he got the opposite. And he could have framed the situation in one of different ways. He could have framed it on the negative side, and this is what he would have said if he had framed it this way from Philippians 1, verse 12 to 13 in the NWV version, which is the New Winers version. It's not a real thing. This is what he could have said. Now, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me really sucks. As a result of the hell I've been through, I'm quitting life group and I'm never going back to church. That's not what he said. He said, now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I'm in chains for Christ. What's happening? I'm locked up to a Roman guard. I don't know what their hours were in those days, but say 8 hours at a time. And every 8 hours, I get another one. What do you think who do you think the real prisoner is here? I'm getting to preach to a captive audience, and I get new influential people every 8 hours who have to sit and listen. And then in verse 14, he says, and because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters, they become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. And guess what? It looks bad because I'm in chains. But because I'm in chains, they're daring to proclaim the gospel even more boldly and without fear. And it's not the facts that are different. It's how he's framing it. So how can I reframe my story in relationships? Because what I know right now, many of us, we've got a battle going on in our mind. And our life has complications. We all do. We all have stuff. Every single one of us. There hasn't been a day where stuff hasn't happened, right? Whether it's with our family, with our kids, with our neighbors, with the people we work with, you know, a bad report from the doctor, fighting with my spouse, financial problems, fear. There's always stuff happening. And so often, so much of life is generally, you know, pretty decent. But often it's the small part of, you know, the small part of the stuff that ends up taking us out of God's will, and it causes us to forget God's presence with us. And I'm just going to throw up a picture here. There. Do you see it? So when I was first in the process of being diagnosed with PTSD and an anxiety disorder and figuring out medications and what that would look like, that's what my world looked like to me. And at the beginning, I was put on a health leave, which lasted for 6 months from Westwood. And at the beginning of it, Lisa and I went to a retreat called Oasis, and it's nothing like that. It wasn't even you know how some people say, I'm going on a work retreat? You're going to work. Okay, it's not a retreat. You're working. This was not an oasis. There was three other pastor couples that were there also. All of us had some form of trauma that we were working through, and then we had counselors and psychiatrists and mediators and all sorts of things. And it was an intensive 6-day work, figuring out what's going on. And my world looked, I couldn't see anything. It was just bleak. It was a white dot. And at the end of the retreat, we had to work through some stuff. Sorry, camera people, I didn't tell you I was going to move. Go to the next picture, Colin. At the end of the retreat, one of the psychiatrists said, had a bunch of artwork that he just placed around the room, and he goes, I want you guys to walk around the room, look at the art, and just find one that is expressing where you're at. And because we had helped people reframe things and give us a new filter, both Lisa and I just looked at, there's nothing special about the picture. It's a, they're rocks in a river, okay? It's not, there's no profound anything. We looked at it and we're like, that's how we feel. And so we bought the picture right there. And it hangs in our house. And every time I look at it, it's a reminder that God can change my thinking. God can change how I view what I'm going through and what it means. And I just thank God for his faithfulness. And I was helped to reframe the story I was going through. And for us, I think we can do a few things. We can do. I'm just going to highlight three things that we can do to help reframe how we experience life. The first is thank God for what didn't happen, right? My wife thanks God every day for what didn't happen to me as a teenager and a young adult, right? I've learned recently that male brains, the frontal lobe doesn't come in till about 25, so they're pretty much incapable of making a good decision. It's just a fact. I don't know if it's a fact. That's just what I've been told, okay? But we can thank God for what didn't happen. You know, sometimes we're in a job, we have a goal at work, and we didn't make the target, so, you know, I don't get the bonus. And I was going to use that for my kids. And we feel devastated by it. But we can thank God that in a very compromised economy, I didn't actually lose my job. And suddenly we're reframing the situation rather than just focusing on what's wrong. We can actually see what's right. Another thing we can do is we can pre-frame and walk in believing that God will walk with us in whatever we face. So when I walk out the door in the morning, I remind myself, God, you're here. You're present. You like me. He loves me. Sometimes he likes me, right? But he always loves me. And that's incredible. What a promise to hold on to as I head into my day with the different people I'm going to have to interact with. The third thing we can do is we can look for God's goodness. Because when we look for God's goodness, we will find it. If we look for good, we'll find good. If we look for bad, we will find bad. We know this. If I want to see what's wrong in every single day, I can do up a checklist. It will be pretty accurate. If I don't want to like people today, I can find a ton of reasons not to like people today. But if I want to look for God, if I want to see faith, I will find it. You will find it. And what's wrong in the world is that we can really live depressed, negative lives. But instead, if we want to look for where God is working, we can see that he's still on the throne, he's still good, he's still powerful, and he still answers prayers. And I looked over this past 2 years, and I've had, you know, the thoughts, we've all had different thoughts about the weirdness and strangeness of this. Conversations seem different now. Kids seem different. And we all had a version of these last 2 years where we shut down. Almost 2 years of not meeting, getting used to not being around so many people. I mean, one of my mottos early on was introverts of the world unite separately. I saw that in a meme and I was like, yeah. And then I had this massive fear of getting together again. How do you navigate through that? And each of us has had a different experience of what that looked like. Then there was, if you reopen, you're dangerous. That's what some of us thought. And then if you don't reopen, you don't have faith. That's what some people thought. Then there was the mask thing. If you wear a mask, you're a puppet of the government. If you don't wear a mask, you're dangerous in the world. And we're talking like there was hatred of Christians towards Christians. And that needs to be healed. And even with the purest of intentions to love people well, none of us got it exactly right. I know I didn't. And as the band comes up on stage, as I look back over the last few years, it's easy at first glance to think it was the worst. But actually, I've seen so many incredible blessings when I reframe it. I see how my relationship with my children deepened, right? That's my son. And I look at the church that had to close down, and then, attendance is like, half of what it used to be. But somehow in the middle of that, God, who is always faithful, reframing. And if God is working in all things for good, then it's time to reject the unhealthy thoughts. Do away with those frames that tell you you can't and you won't. And you're nothing and you're a failure and you're not smart. And we're going to reframe it. And what we're doing is we're not passively receiving circumstances, but we're actively interpreting them. And guess what? We're not interpreting the goodness of God through our circumstances. We're interpreting our circumstances, but we're doing it through the goodness of God. And what has actually happened has served to advance the gospel, because we can't control what happens, but we can control how we frame it. So I want to leave you with this word from Paul. Do not be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And when you know the truth will set you free. And scripture and songs are a great way to help us begin the journey of reframing. So let's start that journey with this song, God So Loved.
Awesome. Thank you, Craig. Why don't we stand together? If you know this song, I encourage you to sing it loudly. It's a bit of a upbeat, fun song, so please sing with us if you know it.
Praise God from whom all blessings flow.
guys so much for being with us and online. It's awesome. Hey, how many of you enjoyed this three-week series if you've been here on mental health? Thank you so much to Pastor Craig and Ryan. It was so refreshing. I know many people have been impacted. Next week, we restart our series on Revelation, and if you haven't been here during that series, I just highly encourage you to come. Don't be afraid of the book of Revelation. It's weird, and we can acknowledge that, but our pastoral team is doing an amazing job explaining it and bringing the context to life, so thank you again for that. Go have a great day, and we'll see you next week.